If Every Day Was Christmas by Donna Ashcroft. Read by Kathleen McCarran for Saga Egmont. Chapter 1. 4 missed calls. Meg Scott pushed her mobile back into her pocket, putting into practice one of her favourite philosophies. If you don't let yourself see, hear or smell something, it won't exist. Besides, she could guess why her father was calling and had promised herself she wouldn't relent.
So we're down to our final option.
Morag Dooley whacked a reindeer-shaped salt shaker onto a table in Meg's cafe, imitating a judge with a gavel. The black cape she wore, done up to the chin in her mass of grey curls, added to the illusion. Meg glanced around the small room, which was situated in the back corner of her all-year-round Christmas shop. She'd added an extra layer of festive decoration the evening before because it was mid-November. A Christmas tree, flashing white icicle lights, green and red tablecloths, and sparkly snowman centrepieces, which gave her a warm, fuzzy glow. The counter in the corner of the room, behind which Cora Dougal, Meg's assistant and uber barista, stood, was lined with tinsel and displayed what was left of the cafe's decimated stock of Christmas-themed cakes, biscuits and sandwiches. The rest had been snapped up by the 24 locked-in residents squeezed around the 6 tables clustered into the small space.
"I propose this year's Christmas promise is to fix the village hall roof,"
Morag declared with another triumphant whack.
"Does everyone agree?"
"The roof has to be a priority," Fergus Mackenzie growled.
He was a handsome man in his late 60s, with a silver beard and dark grey eyes. He grimaced at his coffee, which Morag had forbidden him to add whiskey to earlier.
"The jam club has been coming into Applecross Inn every Thursday evening since the village hall closed, and they're disturbing my alone time with all that blethering."
Beside Fergus, Agnes Stewart's green eyes twinkled as she jabbed him gently in the ribs. They'd started dating over 4 months before, and Meg knew she was used to his curmudgeonly ways. "A lot of clubs have been forced to close since the roof started to leak, and loads of events have been called off," Cora said quietly. "We were going to have my new grandbabies christening there next spring because our house is too wee. Now I've nowhere to host the party."
"Unless the roof gets fixed soon, I hear the building may be irreparable. There's talk of damp in the walls and cracks appearing in the ceiling."
Grant Stewart, a local sheep farmer and Agnes's son, said balefully. There was a rumble of surprise from the assembled group. Morag nodded.
"Then I think we're all agreed."
She didn't wait for a response, and instead whacked the salt shaker onto the table again. For hundreds of years, the inhabitants of Lockton, a village set deep in the picturesque Scottish Highlands, had made a promise to do something for the community in December. The promise was then handwritten on crisp paper and hung on the 20-foot Nordman fir in the village square, which had sprouted in an ancient wishing well. Legend had it that any promise hung on the tree would be helped along by the various spirits who were said to live in the surrounding mountains. Whether it was through magic or the sheer determination of the locals, every pledge made by the village in almost 200 years had been kept. Over time, the villagers had begun to hang up their own personal promises as well, and the tradition had grown.
"How much do we need to raise?" Meg asked.
"Davy knows someone in Moradin who quoted 15,000 for the roof,"
Morag said, and Grant let out a whistle of shock.
"And that was mites rights,"
Davy Becker, owner of Applecross Inn, interjected.
"You wouldn't believe how much some people charge. But the offer only stands until February. After that, he says there'll be way more work."
"We need fundraising ideas."
Morag took her seat again and glared at the assembled crowd when no one spoke.
"Anyone?"
Davina McGee, who lived on a farm located a few miles outside Lockton,